Join us for the third exciting season of Castaway. This year, we are bringing our competitors to the harshest environment we've ever had, perhaps the harshest one on Earth, the tundra. It is the middle of winter, the snow is heavy, the temperatures are below zero, and the wild is out to get you. Our most recent season of Castaway will be taking place on the tundra, and that will be happening live January 7th through February 11th at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, with a whole new cast of incredible APers from all across the scene. Get ready to see Nate from What Do I Roll, Abigail the Nerd, Anna Eliza from Hilarity Saves, Ross from Blades of Mayari, Blue from Batty Bards, Jenna Daggers, Hamna Shahid, Mags from Streaming Rainbow, Spunky Taylor, and Tori from Athraplay. That again is Castaway the Tundra, starting on January 7th through February 11th, raising funds for Feeding America. We hope to see you there on Twitch.
And so it begins.
Once upon a time.
I'll make a long story short.
Let me tell you a story.
This is the story.
Story time.
And this is how it ends.
Hey, we're back for another episode of Uh-Oh, It's Story Time.
Yeah, we're back. Play more games that Rara made.
Sooner or later, we may run out, and then maybe we'll just play games that our friends have made.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. And then maybe we could get more than two people in here. Today we're going to be playing My Love is a Creature, which is a little game I made after Mia requested it, because I thought they had it in mind for something, and then after I made it, Mia's like, no, I just wanted it.
Yeah, pretty much.
So it can get a little dark, so maybe assume there's going to be some horror-like elements to this, probably a decent amount of body horror. If any of that happens, it'll probably keep happening. You know how this stuff is. For those of you tuning in for the first time, this series will not be as edited as standard Thyad episodes, because they take forever. This is just the chance to play a little more casually and explain how these games work, so there's examples for when people want to go get them for free. Mia, what are you thinking about today's game? Any thoughts before we get started?
Any thoughts? No, I was super excited when you were first sending me the drafts of this game, because I truly just wanted to be a nasty little creature. When I sent in the request, I think all I said was like, yeah, the couple of lovers, and one of them goes nasty, and that's it. That's the prompt. No other help or guidance.
Nasty jazz. Sorry, listeners, for some reason my throat's all scratchy now, so if my dulcet tones are slightly sloppy, forgive me from your nasty hearts. In this game, you start off as two individuals. You don't necessarily have to be people. And there are four chapters and then a final chapter. Over the series of the game, we'll roll a die at the beginning of each scene, which will kind of give us a prompt or make us take a spark or two. Sparks are almost vague roleplay prompts, and when you use all of them up, that's when the final scene begins, if you don't just get there organically. Mia, what are the dice like in this game?
Yeah, for this game, you just need a d4, a d6, a d8, and a d10. A d4 for chapter 1, d6 for 2, and so on for a d8 and a d10.
So today, I'm going to be the creature, and Mia, who wanted to be a nasty little person, is going to be the innocent.
Yeah, I'm going to be the normie.
Mia was the creature in the test run of this, which we played like 2 days ago for the first time. So made a few little changes to the game, misspelled the word beginning, and now we're here to play through it in its final form. It is close to Halloween, so at least there's still a little bit of a spooky season. All right, so our setting, we've already chatted about. It'll be us getting to a campground that is far away from everything, a very secluded place that we've definitely been before.
I don't know. I don't know if I should say anything more, because I think we can just get right into it, no?
My name will be Elliot, and Mia's name will be...
Lucy.
So at the very beginning for chapter one, we roll a d4.
And I rolled a 4.
So since we each rolled a 4 in chapter one, we both have to take 2 sparks. This is a pretty dramatic beginning to the game. I would say the most dramatic beginning there could be.
Yes, and... for our sparks, the sparks are different for the innocent and for the creature, and you can pick and choose which ones you want to go with, so.
All right, do you know which 2 you are going to take?
Yes, I think I will take I'm Growing Afraid. Both rolled 4, so that's pretty dramatic. And I think the second one I will do, I think we need help.
Those are great choices. I think I'm going to go with There's a Darkness Here, and Part of Me Has Changed. Chapter 1, The Lovers. You use a d4, and this is how our story begins. A setting, a home, a life, happy and full, unaware of the darkness that approaches. The innocent begins this chapter.
It normally takes us a few hours to get to where we're going. Camp Tulaski, one of our favorite places to come visit. We need some time away from the world. And I've told you this before, it's actually my favorite place. It's this run-down campground that's hidden somewhere beyond the pines. And I like it because, well... no one else really comes to visit or whenever we come around. And I like it that way. I like knowing that you and I can enter this space where only the trees can see us, where only we can explore together, hand in hand. And as we were driving and we crest over the hill and see the sight of it, a little place where we'll make something of a temporary home. I can feel it shedding off of me. The weight, the burden of responsibility, all the things that tire me that maybe don't tire you. But you appreciate it. You care for me anyway, despite the shortcomings of mine. So my hand squeezes around yours, extra tight. This is how it was a few hours ago. Then everything changed.
Elliot has always had a foot in both worlds. Taking in the nature, the sounds, the seclusion, that nostalgic warmth when you return to a story that you picked up years before. but also the same draw to pull out his phone to check the work email. Though he is on vacation, he never really takes one. And there's always that distraction with so many clients always seeking his legal advice. But when he's here, he's not pretending to be. He's just not always here. Unloading the tent and the coolers, all the things you need out of the vehicle, and deciding which things you can leave there for a while. How long do you think it's been since we've been here?
Probably just a year. I think this is a yearly occurrence for them.
And I think in this kind of parceled campground, like none of the spots are side by side like they would be around like a overly used lake or something of that sort. There are maybe half a dozen campsites, but they're over hills or around bunches of trees where you can't see them from one another. The spot being secret, not really on any guide websites, but more for the people who know. And I think we always go to the same one. It's open in the front where we would park the car, off to the side, so we can look out the front of the tent without having to see the vehicle, and just having the open kind of expanse of a small meadow before it dead ends against a bunch of trees. And the hills kind of behind us, an old dirt mound with some small pines that have been planted more recently than most of the other trees here, but give a perfect amount of shade when the sun is at its peak. You can even look at the little picnic table that's there not far from the fire pit, and each year there is a small carving of the initials L and E or E and L.
And just below it, you can see rows of notches every year that they visit, like a ritual returning. And eagerly, Lucy reaches into her back pocket for a small pocket knife that she carries. And as she goes, setting down her pack to make yet another notch, she looks past the trees at one of the usually empty campsites here at Camp Tulaski. And she stops, her eyes narrow, and she calls back to you. Is that another truck? Do you see that?
His sort of Ichabod Crane body turns and raises like one hand to his brow, facing where now the sun is currently at almost dusk level. And I think so. Have we ever seen anyone else out here?
No, that's new. And she kind of looks back at you, pocket knife in hand, and kind of shrugs her shoulders. I guess we have to pick a new place now, huh?
There goes Skinny Dipping, and he starts setting up the tent, always enjoying tasks that would be better for more than one person to do himself, while you and the knife focus back on the table. He very much plots it out, like, here's where the poles go, and puts everything exactly where it needs to be before putting it together. You know, after years of watching him put together, like, the mail-order desk or bookshelf, that despite any frustrations, he's very at home in this moment.
And she watches you happily setting the table. While she knows that she can probably do most of the things that you do for the two of them, she lets you. She likes it, the feeling of being cared for, and she likes that you want to do it. With how busy you are most of the time, it's little labors like this that can make the time and distance from each other worth it.
Naming and qualifying everything like he's the first person in the Garden of Eden. This pole's getting a little squeaky. Oh, might have to replace this ring sometime. this zipper stuck, almost like he's prophesying over these items, how he will remember to care for them later as he is setting up this tent, swatting away mosquitoes and things as there usually are around at this time of the year. They always love me. They love me every time. And just a scratching overly animatedly.
And at that, Lucy goes back to her pack, reaches inside, reaching for the mosquito repellent. But unbeknownst to you, her hand, the side of it, brushes up against a small little box hidden away, something special and secret for later. She comes round with the repellent and starts spraying all around you. This should help, hopefully.
He spins like a ballerina in a music box just opened. He unbuttons slightly his bright pink Hawaiian shirt that has green cactus on it. And you can already see where he's been bitten a few times, but you can also see the red marks where he's already scratched it too much here and there. Perfect. Lather me up.
And she does so, happily.
There's just the chime of his cell phone in the distance, but he doesn't go to get it. The tent is not done. One thing at a time. Though he does continue to look off in the direction of the other truck, just knowing someone else is out here changes the vibe slightly from it being a secluded spot in nature that happens to have a picnic bench and a fire pit to a campground. Now it's being alone with a stranger, not just being alone with one another. But he assumes or hopes that it's like a family, and then maybe they'll be a little loud, but probably not trouble of any sort. Well, maybe they're leaving tomorrow. I mean, that's kind of why we come on Sundays. Most people aren't camping Monday through Friday.
Yeah, I mean... And she cranes her neck, trying to see if there's... any sign of movement or anyone sitting in the truck, as they've seen no figure just yet. Maybe. I guess as long as they stay over there, it should be fine, right?
They better believe it. They come over here, we're gonna probably offer them a beer.
Or we could beat them up. I have a knife.
You do. You have a massive pocket knife for your very large pockets.
Yeah.
I'd say the tent maybe has the initial poles within its notches now, where it's at least upright. But then he remembers he didn't do something, and he scoots it to the side, still maintaining its shape, and gets out like a 3-foot leveling bar from the car as he goes over the spot where the tent will be inch by inch, making sure it's level and flat and packed down, because this will probably be where you're sleeping for a few nights. And he's just obnoxious that way. Not requiring perfection, but requiring the attempt for perfection. Still scratching. It's easier to scratch after you spray me. I'm more slick.
Sure are slick. And as you go to take care of the necessities, she goes to prepare the activities. She pulls out from the cooler packs of marshmallows and chocolate bars. Things for s'mores at the fire later today. I think she pulls out like a badminton net. And goes to set it up. And she looks over at the sky. What does the sky look like?
If the sun and moon follow each other to make day or night, what if seasons do the same? And what it looks like is when fall is heading out and winter has just arrived. It is not crisp and cool yet, but you can already tell it's on its way as the last leg of fall is going on. So there's almost this darker patch of clouds that are moving in the distant, and then a paler sort that's coming in, promising not as many spooky nights, but much more frigid mornings. There are patches of sunlight coming through. We both hope tomorrow will be a little sunnier. It's usually not quite this cold at this point, but the weather's just been a little different this year. It is beautiful, though. In the city, it is so hard to see the sky properly, only getting it in little glimpses, like when we're taking pictures of the stars with a Polaroid. But you do hear him begin to curse at the ground that will not get leveled. As you have already set up the badminton net, you have already completed your task so efficiently, and you just hear a goddamn fucking goddamn earth. The whole goddamn earth has to be fucking round as he's trying to flatten it and flatten it, as this has already taken way too long.
Lucy strides over and goes, "Yeah, just keep yelling at it. I think that'll help."
And he does. He continues to yell at it, while really focusing on this last, 9 inches of dirt in one corner that he just can't get level, but also scratching at that place in his chest to the point where there's a redness that is not just made and abandoned, but made and continued, with a bug bite in the center of it. A small, mosquito bite in the center of it.
Oh, hun, let me, here, and, she'll go, step away to the picnic, table, where they set a number of their different packs and bags and things aside, and she pulls out this little tube of ointment. Come here. Let's take a break, why don't we?
Maybe the ground'll do what it's supposed to.
Yeah, maybe it needs some time to think about what it's done.
Scratch, scratch.
She takes your hand and sits the two of you at the picnic table. Hands on your shoulders as she turns you to face her and pushes your chin back a little bit so your chest extends out. Jeez, already? It's only been a few hours.
They can't get enough of me.
Yeah, I can relate.
While you look, he also has one hand rested on your shoulder, and you can't help but notice that one finger isn't as much making circles on your skin, like kind of an absent-minded affection, but it is scratching, as though you have an itch it's trying to tend to.
I think at first Lucy doesn't comment on it. She shifts slightly to give you a silent indication to perhaps stop. But she applies the ointment on the bug bite in the center of your chest. That should feel better soon. And then we can get back to yelling at Mother Earth.
And giving up on leveling that last part of the ground, having now disconnected from the hyperfixation, and returning to it and understanding it's not that big of a deal. And after that, it's a very easy put up the shade tarp. Maybe even having asked if you would want to start the campfire since dusk is approaching, and just because, you know, when you're camping, why not have one all the time?
And so she goes to prepare the fire. She... What are those little things called?
Logs.
No, yes, thank you. Thank you, darling. So she heads off, heading up the little hill that sits at the back of this camp. While it's probably not necessary to go uphill, she likes it. That feeling of elevation, feeling the burn in her calves as she makes her trek, grabbing what kindling that she can find. And as this distance between you grows larger, shapes of the car and you and the tent and the picnic table growing small, she stops, hearing the snap of a twig. She has now a bundle of kindling in her arms. And while she doesn't reach for it, she can feel the pocket knife in her back pocket.
All right, dear listeners, we're going to move to chapter 2 here. In the game's writing, it says everything happens at night. That's not necessary, to be honest. I may take it out. So we're just going to fast forward, that's not it. We're just going to move into chapter 2, and it'll just be a little bit later this same day, like once the sun is all the way down.
Chapter 2, The Chariot. In this chapter, an issue begins to rise and cannot be ignored. It can be a change in the creature's appearance, demeanor, words. It is not hidden. The innocent does notice. The creature goes first in this chapter.
Why don't we both roll our d6 to see what sparks or prompts we get? I got a 3, which is take one spark.
Why don't you let us know what spark you're taking? Because I rolled a 2, meaning I can remove a spark from either myself or from you.
I'm going to take the spark, look what I can do. And that is 3 of the 8 I now have.
I think I'll take one from you. I'll remove from you, there's a darkness here.
Later that night, we've cleaned up a camping dinner. Vegetables or meats cooked like in tin foil that we just throw on to where the fire is. Not a lot to clean up. Pots and pans are always a little difficult when you're camping. It's chilly out, but we both took a small rinse from the little camping water shower bag that we always hang in the same tree behind where we set up the tent. It's dark out, but it's not late yet. The fire's casting an orange light around us. We have yet to see the stranger at the other side, but we can see the light of their own glow. The shadows are confusing. It may be one, it may be more. We're almost trying to not be too interested. This is the best part of camping, the night. Everyone cleaning up much earlier than they would at home. So you can sit around the fire and listen to things burn, or listen to the forest and how things live. Even through his heavy hoodie and pajama pants, you can see the occasional scratch to the chest before almost pulling his hand away like he's trying to mentally stop himself from doing that. But it continues to happen. The phone beeps in the tent, but he's not getting it. Not tonight. So how long do we have to wait for s'mores? Is there like a legal limit? Because I can check the books.
Oh, no, not a worry. I just checked the bylaws. I think we're good to go.
I love it when my laws are by.
Always.
Of course you must have s'mores. And then after it's that decision, are we smoking that blunt or are we drinking those beers? You know, camping decisions. And so we get out everything to make the s'mores. The table, just that fun camping table where it's all cut up and jagged, and you don't really think you should set anything on it you're gonna eat, but you still sort of do, because you're camping. So do you just want classic, or do you want one of the variations?
And she plops down into one of the camping chairs beside you. She has a matching hoodie. You're not that kind of couple that matches clothes all the time, but for these trips, when it's just the two of you, she makes note of it and tries to keep the wardrobes in sync. She slumps down and looks up at the sky. Why not classic?
They call it that for a reason.
Yeah, why break tradition?
And his head twitches for a second to the side with like, did you just hear someone scream?
No. Did you?
Oh, I thought I did. It might have just been the wind. Or like a coyote.
Yeah. And Lucy sits up and she looks to the trees that do not sway as there is no wind.
Maybe it was one of the scary stories that live in the woods out here.
Oh, do you think it's Mothman?
Mothman doesn't really scare me. All I do is throw a flashlight and they would be distracted for hours.
Maybe it's like a weird mating call.
That's why I only heard it.
Like you said, all the bugs want you.
It's just a giant mosquito with eyes like the ocean.
And she reaches over, pinching your cheek.
He reaches up and lightly scratches yours.
She has to stop herself from flinching. It doesn't hurt, it doesn't bother her, but normally it's a smoother motion, not a scratch. She moves from the back of her seat and goes to the edge and turns to look at you. So, how are you doing? You've been letting that thing ring all day.
I told them today was an unreachable day, and I'm sticking to it. Tomorrow, I will respond to one thing every 2 hours, and that is my limit. This is vacation.
Yeah, I wonder how many fires are starting right now because you ignored them.
I mean, people have been asking that to God for centuries. And he gets up to chop some firewood to add a little more onto the pile. And when his thin Ichabod Crane body swings that axe down, it goes through the log it was on, and tings into the concrete hard enough to dent it. Oh, shit.
I think Lucy, just screamed at the sound of it.
Sorry, I guess I'm just really strong.
Holy shit.
I just swung too hard, I'm sorry. I thought the wood would be harder. Throws the logs onto the fire, a little finger scratching at his chest.
Okay, why don't we get started on those s'mores? I think the fire's fine as it is for now.
How can I have s'more when I haven't had one yet?
Let's just come here.
Always.
She has no witty comeback to that.
And you form your little conveyor belt of s'more making. Do you think you're the one who cooks them or the one that prepares them?
I think she cooks them. I think she's very meticulous about the shade of the marshmallow. There is a perfect one, of course. Somewhere in between the fluffy white that it begins as and the charred black that it could be.
And it's the same as it always is. Both of you moving so in sync together after all these years of learning how the other one inhales before they shift. Or moves a hand before they pass. Just all the little signs that one can find out if they're willing to look and remember. I think that's always been the easy way for them to love sometimes. When words are hard to find, they can build a structure of time. I think it was Rilke who said something about what is love but protecting the solitude of the other. And I think sometimes that is the space that exists between them. Very happy to be alone as two. Not to say that Elliot will not cut a rug or embarrass you at bars and dance clubs and anything where they can don the other hat of maestro or carnival barker that is also in their tool set.
And his nervous and frantic, those moments can sometimes make her... She loves that she can be a moon in your orbit when you are an exploding sun. Unafraid to be loud and colorful, where she is muted and quiet. And here, even in the silence, her heart is loud. The joy that she feels being here with you. A silence, and then something changes.
And I think again he looks in the distance like he heard something that you cannot hear. but this time with that look of recognition of, I know I've heard that before, and I'm hearing it again. Are you sure you don't hear that?
No, I... Maybe, and she stands up, looks over at the other campsite. I don't know, I'm... Maybe they're making noise, but I really didn't hear anything.
It sounded further away than them.
And she'll come over and place a hand on the top of your head and stroke it down behind the ear. You sure you're okay?
He leans into it in a way that you could only interpret as looking for a scratch. Like more how a dog would lean into a fingernail versus stay for a pat. I'm good. I think it's just, you know, you always need one day to detox the city, and maybe I'm still hearing all those fucking sirens that wake us up every single night.
Yeah. Okay.
That feels nice.
Yeah. She has a playful look on her face. Maybe the mosquitoes got you behind there and starts playfully tug at your hair to see.
Maybe you gave me lice and a little patch of hair comes out in your hand.
Oh, shit.
That feels nice.
Sweetie, and she'll let the hair fall. But turn around.
You really gave me a tug, didn't you?
I didn't even pull that hard. Let me see.
And leans down for you to see.
What does it look like?
I think it was so small that the only way you could see is if you separated other hair. Like, it's not like an obvious golf ball-sized patch or anything. Maybe I heard it setting up the tent or something. Maybe I hit it on one of the poles. It doesn't hurt. I forgive you.
Yeah, and she looks at her very short nails. Sorry, honey.
Use a peanut butter cup instead of a chocolate bar.
Yes, good idea.
I think we brought like 4 variations. Are you sure you don't hear that? And he's looking in a different direction this time.
Ellie, are you pranking me? I'm really not hearing anything.
Maybe I've got a little tinnitus. A linitis is what they call it when it's a small case.
Littleitis.
That's right. So, cracker, peanut butter cup, marshmallow, cracker. We'll see if round 3 can handle more layers than that.
It's at this moment Lucy realizes she's bunching up the bottom of her sweater. Instead of wringing her hands, she plays with the fabric. Sweetie, I normally don't do this, but I'm gonna need you to put on that charming persona of yours. Why don't we go meet the strangers over there, and I don't know, maybe share a s'more or two.
You know how I feel about strangers in the woods. But no, it might be better to do that than to just, like, guess at what monsters are over there all night.
Yes, the totally ravenous, lusty Mothman that's waiting for you.
Okay, but they don't get a peanut butter cup s'more. They get classic.
Yes, we're gonna hide the contraband.
Okay. And then when we get back, I think I want beer tomorrow. I think a blunt would be better tonight.
Why don't we try just a beer? Because I'm just worried that if you keep hearing the siren call of Mothman while you're high, I don't know. I don't know if I want to see that side of you yet.
All right, let's go meet a stranger in the dark woods.
And so they walk.
Hi, I'm Maia, and this is Maia's Game Room, a narrative actual play anthology featuring short-form, story-driven TTRPGs. Each season tells a new story using a different rules-light system brought to life with sound design, editing, and emotional-rich roleplay. So, if you love cinematic storytelling and character-driven drama, come check out Season 1, set in the haunting world of the Electric State RPG. Just search Maia's Game Room wherever you get your podcasts.
Chapter 3, The Reverse Magician, Conflict. The D8 is the die we use. The issue is growing out of control. Something is broken, something is lost. The innocent goes first in this chapter. Oh shit, I rolled an 8.
Okay, I rolled a 2. That is... so I get to remove one again.
I'm going to go with, this is all your fault, and there is a darkness here.
I think I'll remove for myself. I think we need help.
So, Mia, how many sparks do you have at the moment?
I have 1, which is, I'm growing afraid.
And I have 4, which is, part of me has changed. Look at what I can do. There is a darkness here, and this is all your fault.
The old man rambled for a while, exchanging stories with you, Elliot, while I just kind of stood there. As I normally do whenever we meet someone new. And it's not like I don't want to talk, more so that I just don't have anything to say. You always knew how to make something out of nothing, how to make sound from silence. And for that, I've always been grateful. But the more it went on, and the old man droned and droned about how he hadn't been here in years, and about his wife, Elaine. She could feel it, that she could feel the rest of her social battery drain away, thinking, maybe I shouldn't have suggested this. And in an hour's time, eventually, we bid the old man good night and returned to our camp. And now, hoodies removed, pillows set up, we are inside the safety of our tent. And as we prepare the blankets, Lucy can't help but look over her shoulder at you, at your chest. So he was nice.
You really didn't have to tell him we'd play a game of Uno with him tomorrow night, though.
I didn't know what else to say. I don't know.
As his Ichabod Crane body strips down to just, like, pajama pants, the chest does not look good. It doesn't look like skin's been broken. There's not blood or anything like that. But the redness is deep and focused there in the middle. The same spot he's been scratching all night, to the point where he even notices and looks down like, oh shit, maybe tomorrow I'll like put a Band-Aid over it just so I won't keep scratching. You know I always keep scratching.
I think Lucy doesn't say anything and immediately goes over to a first aid kit that we have. And she takes out some antibiotic ointment and begins to apply it. Does this hurt?
No, that feels nice.
It feels nice? It, like, no itchiness?
You touching it feels nice.
Yes, I know, my sweet. Thank you. Does it hurt?
No, it doesn't hurt. We should turn the light off soon.
Okay. You don't hear anything anymore, right?
A couple birds. That could be a deer. I like it when you breathe.
No, Daddy Mothman screaming.
No, I mean, if we run into him tomorrow, maybe we'll do it like, hey, we noticed you from across the campsite. But for now, I think I'm good with just us.
Okay. Sounds like a plan.
Later that night, after sleep has already been found, after other things have been found, Lucy wakes to the sound of the zipper very quickly being unzipped and the sound of Elliot leaving the tent in like a rush. I know I heard it. I know I heard it. And running out into the dark without a light or a shirt.
Adrenaline throws Lucy to her feet as she clambers out of the tent, calling your name. Ellie, where are you going?
And your fire's gone. There are no lights. Just with the dim moonlight that's only showing through the clouds in bursts or patches, you see his Ichabod Crane body as it vanishes in the dark towards the campsite of George.
She runs, unaware of how the twigs and the dirt and the earth begin to bruise and cut her feet, screaming your name, asking you to come back.
And you hear him screaming forward as he enters George's campsite, impossibly fast for one that does much more yoga than running.
Where are they? Where are they? I know they're here. I can hear them, George,
as he's opening a tent in the dark. You can hear the zipper, though you're still a little ways away.
It's at this point, sound begins to numb around her. She cannot hear the shrillness in her own voice as she just says, Elliot, 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 over and over again, a plea, a cry. When she finally makes it to you, I think you already disappear into the tent.
You're almost there. You can see the shape of the tent against all the organic lines of the trees behind it. You hear Elliot screaming things like, tell me, where are they? Where are you keeping them? And you hear a gunshot. You know Elliot does not have a gun. You are about 10 feet away when there is a sound that not many will ever hear and would be impossible to describe. Besides a breaking, did you bring a light with you, or did you just run?
Lucy follows Elliot wherever he goes, into light or into dark.
It's terribly quiet, but for the sound of some gurgling, as you see his Ichabod Crane body step out of the tent back into the night and zips it shut behind him. George doesn't have anybody. I think I just had a bad dream. Sorry, we should get back to bed.
Elliot, what the fuck?
I think I sleepwalked, sleep ran. But he's fine. Come on.
And Lucy doesn't move, eyes scanning Elliot's form for any sign of blood or a gunshot wound.
In the dark and the moon, there's nothing you can see. Besides almost this like 12 pointed scar area on his chest from where you can see five fingers scratching one way, then another way, then another way, that has formed almost this Christmas ornament type of shape. It's even visible in the moonlight because it glistens slightly now with the antiseptics and the ointments of the day. Let's go. We'll see George at the Uno game tomorrow.
Elliot, stop. Where's George?
Oh, he's asleep.
I think she'll walk up to you tenderly. Like she knows she's dealing with some wild animal. Baby, you didn't hear that? There was a gun. Did George have a gun?
I didn't hear a gun. I just heard that scream again, but I think I heard it in my sleep and just ran. You heard something?
I think I did.
Takes your hand lightly while like almost like a romantic walk back to the campsite.
I think numbly she lets you take a few steps, her hand still in yours, but she looks back at the tent. Baby, let me, I'm just gonna say hi to George, okay?
I mean, that's kind of weird, but I mean, if you really feel you need to.
And she lets her fingers slip from yours. Goes to the tent. George? I'm so sorry. It's Lucy. Are you okay?
And there's no response. Guy's already asleep.
I think she reaches for a lantern that George had left at the side of the opening of the tent. Clicks it on and with shaky hands brings it inside to see.
The zipper is such an unorganic sound out here. You can almost imagine rabbits and deers and demons looking up and looking towards it. And what you see is unfortunate. It's unfortunate for you, and it's unfortunate for George. Because the body shouldn't bend backwards like that, where the face and the legs almost become this ring. Eyes open, mouth open more than it should be as the jaw was yanked brutally at one point. You could almost skip him across the lake if you could throw him well enough. He's so round. Yeah, he's sleeping.
This time it's Lucy's turn to hear something the other does not. In this moment, at the sight of such display of cruelty and gruesomeness, something shatters in her. And again, the void of feeling, numbness, she doesn't feel herself fall back into the earth, the lantern clattering beside her. The fire of anxiety and fear burning from within her chest. Baby, what did you do? Thank you. Chapter 4. Death. Everything is in danger. A decision must be made, or an escape. The creature is quite different now. The creature goes first.
That was a 10, so that means 3 of the 4 dice, I have rolled their highest number, which is, like, amazing. I would actually already hit 8, probably, if you hadn't have taken them from me.
Thank God I did. I rolled a 5. So I get to give you an innocent spark.
Oh my gosh, so I get 3 sparks this turn.
Uh-oh.
So I'm gonna take Why Are You So Afraid and Don't You Abandon Me. And which innocent spark would you like me to have?
I think you should take... Let me remind you.
I think that's a wonderful decision.
It's not good for Lucy, but...
Oh, Lucy. A few minutes later, Elliot has been able to prod or encourage you to go back to our own campsite, at least. There's no one else out here now, so it's nice and quiet. We leave the Ring of George behind and make the small walk over to our section. There's that strange lull where it's like, are we getting in the tent to going back to bed, or are we just here? As Elliot is just standing there, halfway between the picnic table and the tent, as though even his positioning was not giving away an agenda. I love nights out here.
Yeah. Me too.
Maybe I should take the rain guard off the tent so we could look at the stars in bed.
That sounds good. That sounds like a good idea. And she stands at a distance away from you, on the other side of the picnic table.
And where he would normally meticulously dismantle it and put each piece where it's supposed to go in the collapsible bag, he just removes it and lazy folds it and drops it on the ground. That's better. We won't get cold. We have each other.
Always. Always.
What's wrong?
Lucy's mind is running one direction towards Elliot, the rest anywhere else. Nothing. I think we didn't have our beers earlier, so maybe I can just have one and it'll take the edge off.
I mean, I could build a real small fire if we wanted to stay up for like an hour now. I'm pretty pumped after that run and talking with George.
Yeah, why don't you start the fire and I'll get the beers going.
You see him with his hands pull a log into smaller pieces. A look on his face as casual as, this is how I always do this, as he's preparing a small fire.
Inside, Lucy is having a conversation with herself, deciding if she needs to make a game plan or... Except that the rules have changed. This can happen, right? Maybe he's been stressed at work a lot, and it's happened to people, to worse people. Maybe it's fine. Maybe I'm overthinking things. And at this point, she's only reached into the cooler for one beer.
He gets the fire going, the orange glow suddenly casting color around this little glen. Wearing just red flannel pajama pants and still no top, still no shoes, though it's much colder than that outside. Nothing has changed on the chest, but down on his abdomen, no inch of Elliot could have gone unexamined by Lucy at this point. But you do see what looks like a scar, long ago healed, round, about the size of a quarter, to the right of his belly button and a mirroring one on his back. As though something passed right through him. Years ago.
I think it's at this time she hears Elliot's phone go off again. And it's like her body made a decision for her as she instinctively reaches for it and begins to dial.
It's almost worse that he doesn't notice. Putting the fire at night, I always forget how many bugs it attracts. And he's kind of waving his hand around his head, trying to keep them away. He's like, I think they're even in my hair. And he begins to run his hands through his hair. And you see sections falling off into the fire beneath him as he shakes his own mane, not noticing what he's losing as much as like, this'll get him.
Her fingers are sweaty on the phone screen, and it begins to ring. Baby, I think we need some help.
What do you mean?
Honey, you're here.
I know. I'll look okay though, right?
Tears begin to prick the sides of her eyes. Elliot, what are you talking about?
In the firelight, where the patches of dark hair have fallen, you see towhead blonde hair underneath. Just beginning, barely a fuzz, a little duckling of a head of hair, but a very different color than has ever been there.
She can't even begin to think of how to respond to this, to any of it. Everything was fine. Everything was fine earlier this morning. What happened? What happened? And then she hears a voice. On the line. And almost like she's scared, she hangs up.
It's almost more strange how parts of him still seem like him. Viciously entertained by the hair falling, having always found everything so curious. It's hard to think that it's the same person that you kissed so deeply in the dark earlier. As you notice, you're lightly scratching your chest.
This is fine. It's fine. It's fine. I can move past this. This is just a bad night, a mistake. She scratches and scratches, as if it's some bad habit from childhood that she's always had.
You both hear a scream from Elliot. As without any motion or direction, he just tilts his head back on the axis of his neck as violently 90 degrees as possible and just screeches upwards towards the tops of the trees before going back to looking at the fire and lightly poking it with one of the s'more sticks.
I heard him. I heard Mothman.
He smiles at you as though you're madly in love. Judgment. After 4 chapters, or whenever the sparks are all chosen or unavailable, the epilogue of Judgment begins. This is the final scene. Whoever has the most sparks is the controlling force. Perhaps the creature is in control and chooses destruction, violence, or hunger. Perhaps the innocent is in control and chooses love, hope, or redemption. If the creature is the controlling force, the scene revolves around the repercussions of their change. If the innocent is in control, the scene revolves around the heart being enough to counter or redeem this newly discovered darkness. The controlling force begins the scene, and the other player follows their lead and theme. If both players have the same amount of sparks, roll a dice to see who begins the chapter and who ends it. Narrate and roleplay how the story fades out and the path ahead. It is not long before all of the dark hair has been shaken off and you see almost like a cut as short as scissors could, mangy, patchwork head of bright, bright blonde hair. It may seem like his eyes are a little larger than normal as well, but it's hard to tell because he keeps tugging at them. Just standing by the fire, letting the flame move over him, his body sweating. I hope we come here every year. I love it out here.
Yeah, me too. Here, let me help you, sweetie. And she steps forward. She doesn't reach for the s'mores. Instead, she reaches for your chest, seeing how the streaks of your fingers, your nails, have marked the skin, and she seems to follow them, almost like swiping her hand through sand.
That feels nice.
You know, you'll have to return the favor, right?
I think his hand goes up to the same spot on you as you both mutually palm to chest. He screams again.
She laughs.
I think when the fire finally burns down, they are both still standing like that. Comfortable in the darkness. At one point in the process, he or both of you had removed your shirt, and you both just stand topless in the cool night air, able to fill the heart so purely, as though you're trying to dig to it but don't have the proper tools but love. It's so quiet now. It's really like we're the only two.
Yeah. It's my favorite thing about this place.
Even in the dark, you can tell he tugs slightly at his eyelids. Always a little baggy from lack of sleep and trauma. But usually, when it just reveals the red of the lid, it's almost like his eyeballs are bigger in his head now. When he tugs down the lids, you see the eye continuing, as though the opening's not big enough for them to fully be revealed.
And so they dig, making sandcastles from flesh, searching in the darkness, the thing that beats for the other. And isn't that love anyway? How much you give to someone else isn't a scratch, a bite. Isn't that touch too?
That feels nice.